Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Matthew. Jesus went out and sat beside the sea. Such crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat there while the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, "Listen, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen." The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. So if you were following along, if you printed out the lessons or have them on your Kindle or your tablet or whatever, you notice that we stopped halfway through what was supposed to be this gospel reading because the lectionary elves jumped a bunch of verses and then tacked on an interpretation of this parable embedded in the gospel according to Matthew that is distinctly unhelpful. And so we just let that go. It is. I mean, it's kind of weird what, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. The story, though, left to stand on its own, is distinctly interesting. So we'll be spending some time talking about that. But first, I want to encourage you folks, when you get a chance, to approach Tracy and thank her for not being inspired to lead you through all 176 verses of Psalm 119. I mean, if we were really going to do this, you know, because we'd be here till about 8 o'clock this evening. And what's interesting about Psalm 119 is it's very repetitive, kind of like a mantra. I mean, I've read any number of biblical commentators who say, oh, for crying out loud, we should just ignore Psalm 119. But if you've, and again, that's a surface reading. If you dig a little deeper than the surface and you were actually to sit down and begin to recite all 176 verses of Psalm 119, you would begin to discover this really interesting repetitive pattern based on the alphabet, the Hebrew alphabet. And it repeats over and over and over again all these various words translated from the word Torah. I mean, the example in these few short verses. There's word, there's judgments, there's laws, there's commandments, there's decrees, there's statutes, and they all come from the same Hebrew word, Torah, which when you and I hear that word, we think of what? We think of a book. And yet, if you were to engage Psalm 119 as the mantra which it was intended to be, you would begin to discover that the ancient ones never thought of Torah as a book. Torah was a living relationship and a dialogue between the people of God and God. And what's interesting, and you know, here comes the this is not the job security sermon today. What the psalmist and the language of Psalm 119 suggests is that the word of God, Torah, this living relationship, this dialogue that God has with the people of God, is completely unmediated. In other words, you don't need a book. You don't need a priest. You don't need a church. Wah! I should just shoot myself in the head right now, right? I mean, you need nothing beyond your sense of the presence of God in your life and in the world to engage Torah. Bet you never knew that one, huh? So, if you get a chance, you got a little time, it'll take you a little while. Go ahead and do Psalm 119 and see where it takes you. It is intended, it was written as a mantra, this wonderful mantra about, you know, what Torah, what this living relationship, this dialogue with God can really be about. It's pretty pretty wonderful. And then, right before that, Tracy shared with us this story in the book of Genesis. I mean, have you figured out yet that this family, the generations now into the family of Abraham and Sarah, that they are a complete train wreck? They are a total train wreck. I mean, there's Isaac, you know, he's praying, oh, we need kids because we, you know, because God made a promise. And then Rebecca is 60 years old and she gets pregnant, and not just with one but two. Yay! 60 years old. And the author tells us, I love the turn of phrase. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, well, the kids are at war. But when she approaches God, this is the part. The writer of Genesis downplays this so big. I mean, if you were 60 years old and discovered that you were pregnant with twins, imagine the conversation you'd be having with God right about now, huh? I mean, seriously. Yeah! I mean, she's going to Isaac going, are you out of your mind? And then she goes to God and says, are you out of your mind? I mean, what are you people thinking? The author sort of plays that down a little bit. And then, you know, they're at war inside of her, so the thought of, are you all out of your mind, probably never leaves Rebecca until she actually gives birth. And lo and behold, now, here they are in their teenage years, they're complete knuckleheads. They're completely out to lunch. Esau, the hairy one, right? I love the descriptions in Genesis. I mean, they're just so, it's fun. You know, Esau gives away his birthright for a bowl of stew. I mean, really? What kind of a bonehead are you? Jacob, you know, who becomes, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the father of, the God of those three. The guy, he's a total schmooze. He's a liar, he's a cheat, he's a thief. And the moral of the story is that somehow the presence of God is woven through this train wreck of a family. If God can use them and be in relationship with a family like this, I think we can work this out, right? I think we're going to be okay. However, what kind of a train wreck our lives might be, it's all, you know, we're in really good company. I mean, I just think these stories are so much fun. And then we come to this story that Jesus tells, and speaking of family, you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Just prior to Jesus getting in the boat, and there's some humor in here, he gets in a boat because there's a big crowd. The boat comes a little ways offshore. The crowd is on the shoreline, and he tells a story about a farmer. I mean, really? Why couldn't it have been one of his fish stories, right? Or something like that. But no. He's going to tell this story about a farmer. And just prior to this scene, his family shows up, and he completely disses them. Somebody says, hey, Jesus, your family's here. And Jesus looks around and says, yeah, who is my family? Who are my mother and brother and sisters? Those who do the will of God, says Jesus. Boosh! So anyone who's attached to the image of family values these days, you might want to seriously reconsider that. from a biblical perspective, because even Jesus' family is a train wreck. I mean, his relationship is a little suspect with his biological family. Again, just interesting stuff. And so he launches into this story, and lo and behold, if you keep reading in the Gospel according to Matthew, the author and this ancient community turn this fabulous story into a morality play. And the way it's interpreted by the Gospel according to Matthew is this whole focus on the soil. And the question that is raised is, what kind of soil are you? Are you good soil? Are you rocky soil? Are you thorny soil? What kind of... Exactly. And the answer is all of the above, right? I mean, that approach to this parable tells us nothing new and in no way offers us any kind of a challenge or an invitation, the kind of challenge and invitation that Jesus would issue to his friends and those who were carting around with him around the Galilee and the Palestine. And so let's just go back to the story. What do you say? So we have this sower who I suppose would be a farmer or at the very least a gardener, right? How many of you folks garden? Oh, a whole bunch. Now, full disclosure, I'm a city boy, born and bred. I mean, my grandparents had a little plot out on Catawba Island, north of Sandusky on Lake Erie. We spent the summers with them, watched them grow various things, but I'm here to tell you, I didn't learn a thing. Nothing. So I run across a story like this, and I have to ask the question about this gardener, this sower, is this for real? Because if you pay attention to the character in the story, this sower, this gardener, is just indiscriminately chucking seed everywhere, left, right, and center. I mean, really? Do you guys do this? Okay. Pardon me? Yeah. Well, here's what I learned at the 8 o'clock service, and this comes under the heading of, if you don't want to hear the answer, don't ask the question. I asked this same question, and Becca Van Sickle, Julie's granddaughter, who is very much involved in farming and ranching and whatnot, she says, oh yeah, this is ancient tradition, and it's called, now, the city boy has got to remember this. Say it again. It's called broadcasting, and it's an ancient farming practice, apparently. I mean, the seed just goes everywhere. I don't know if it matters what kind of seed it is. According to some of the 8 o'clock or some of the farmers, some seed you have to be careful with. Other seed you can just toss anywhere and everywhere. It all had gluten in it. Oh, yeah, here comes Chuck. He's got it. I'm just going to warn you now. One of these days, he's going to pull out his gluten-free sermon. Okay, next time he preaches, and then, of course, one of the 8 o'clockers has to remind us of rhubarb. How rhubarb grows? It's a weed. It's a horrid weed, by the way. The most horrid weed on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. We grew up with it in Cleveland. It grew like a weed because it's a weed around the spigots. And Graham would say, "Go get some rhubarb," because she was a Depression-era woman and used rhubarb as filler in everything. I hate rhubarb. Did I mention that a second ago? I can't stand rhubarb. So anyway, here's this sower indiscriminately chucking seed everywhere. And then the kicker. And then Jesus says, indiscriminate sowing, broadcasting, if you will, results in a yield of 100-fold, 60-fold, 30-fold. In another version of this story, it's the yield is reversed, 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold. I mean, same basic idea. And the people who heard this story originally, and we know this is an original story of Jesus because it was told in Aramaic, and the rest of this gospel is written in Greek, including the interpretation. So, you know, you can kind of figure that one out. The people on the shoreline hearing this story for the first time would have been blown away by the yield. And they would have realized immediately that this the character of the sower, who now we can call this person a broadcaster, is broadcasting seed every which way. I mean, as far as it'll go, that's what the broadcaster is doing. And the yield is such that it's a complete game changer. In other words, this story is not about what kind of soil you and I are. Just, you know, don't waste your time with that one. This is a story about grace and how, let's say, God, the Spirit, Jesus, whoever, are indiscriminate sowers, broadcasters, if you will, and the kicker is also that this is a story about justice. Because the people on that shoreline who are living in exile in their own land hear this story and realize with a yield the likes of which Jesus describes, they could pay their rent, they could feed their family, they could pay off their debt, they could even buy land, the kind of land that God promised generations and generations ago. It's a game-changing story. And it's one that is intended to give both these ancient people and us today some hope that for God's will, God's grace, God's presence, God's mercy, God's forgiveness, God's compassion to be enacted in the world, to be embodied in the world, means that everybody on the planet can feed their family, pay their rent, pay off their debt, even own land. It's a story about justice. God's justice, not our kind of justice, but God's justice. That's a powerful story, isn't it? So while the rest of the world is trying to figure out what kind of soil they are, good luck with that, guys. Let's you and I focus on the heart of the matter, which is this gracious, outrageously compassionate God who wants to provide everything we need in order to live full lives and in order to engage the justice of God that would see everyone being able to provide for themselves and those they love. So, take a moment. Take a deep breath.